Blog Talk Radio.
Who's that lady?
Anna!
Stop! Listen, it's a Rand McCoy show. Stop! Listen, it's the Rand McCoy show. Who's that lady?
Anna!
The Rand McCoy! Stop! Listen, it's the Rand McCoy show. Stop! Listen, it's the Rand McCoy show.
So many things are happening so fast. The Lord asked me, was I ready the January of this year? And, you know, of course, I said, oh, sure, Lord, yes. But I had no idea he was going to move me at the speed that he is moving me. I connected with a woman who was mentoring me in several areas. Her name is Francina Norman. And she signed me for my first internet talk show, which I'm very, very excited about. And it's growing, and people are responding, and we just talk about real stuff. I don't play games, so I have a real problem when I need information and or I need some practical ways how to come from one place to another, and somebody wants to give me an ABC that don't make any sense. So I really spend a lot of time because of my own personal journey really dealing with issues and just hit them head on because I believe as the in the body of Christ, we have wasted a lot of time with a lot of religion and not have taught people the practical side of our walk with God, that he is concerned about every single area, every single sin, every single frustration, every single disappointment and trial in our lives. And so I believe that through this, I've been doing seminars and speaking at conferences. I just left doing a youth conference and trying to grab our youth while we can and impart some real principles to them. And so I'm just excited about what God is doing.
Well, tell us a little bit about your book. Let's start there. Well, I don't want you to tell us a little bit. In fact, you're going to have this entire hour
okay.
to tell us about this book and inspire women to go out, number one, to buy this book. And I want to encourage each one of you to do that. But the other thing is that we want to really hear your story. Many people will have the opportunity to listen to this radio program long after we've done our interview today. It'll
okay.
be all over the Internet. It'll be on our website. It goes out to all of our email lists, and people will have the opportunity to hear your story. So I want you to know that this show is all about you, Deborah. And
okay.
we're going to give you an opportunity to begin to talk about that. So the first thing, and I think the way that I like to talk about it is I want to talk about it from the content of the book. The first thing I want you to talk about when we talk about this journey to wholeness was about the voices. Let's talk about all the voices you heard.
Oh, God. Yes. Yeah. I was married, of course, to Bibi Winans, high-profile gospel artist, producer, the whole nine. And when I went through this divorce and legal separation, and my son was 4 months old when he left, and my daughter was three. And so trying to not take matters into my own hands and make decisions out of my own head, I've sought counsel. And, you know, it's amazing to me the things that people say to you. I actually was told on more than one occasion that, you know, if you leave, the greater judgment will be on you, and, you know, you need to walk around your house and anoint your doorpost and drink 7 bottles of water and stand on top of your head, do cartwheels. I mean, you know, all these crazy things. And it was because I wanted my marriage to work, I was willing to do anything.
So let me stop you just for one moment, Deborah, because I want to make sure that our listeners understand the context in which we're talking today.
Okay.
Deborah Winans was married to the gospel artist, actor, he's just about everything about now, B.B. Winans, and a part of the whole Winans family and the culture and the talent and all of those things and that whole lifestyle of just being a Winans. And we know that the Winans are America's gospel family. And so that you really understand the context, and she's going to be talking to us about this journey to wholeness after what's worse, you never want to have to experience this, having to go through a divorce, and certainly not with a high-profile individual. So
right.
With that, Deborah, I'm going to go back to you and again begin to talk about those voices. So I just wanted to make sure that our listeners have okay. a context in which we're talking today.
I understand. With being married to Bibi, first of all, let me say that I think this is very, very important, and it took me many years to come to this clear understanding. But I came from, personally, in my own family, a long line of men and women who love God. I came out of a Christian family. But because of my own insecurities and my own issues, I actually thought that being married into a family such as this was going to validate who I was as a person. And that is far from the truth.
Wow.
And so my journey began when I had to come to grips with I'm no longer going to be married to this person. I will no longer walk in certain circles. I will no longer have certain privileges and, you know, get to rub shoulders with different people. And, you know, we met in some of who's been in our home and had been in a relationship with. But when the divorce happened, everything changed. Everything changed. And so I don't know if you can mentally even prepare for a divorce. And it is not just a divorce. It's any tragedy, anything that you go through that is very painful. It takes you a minute to regroup. It takes you a minute. And because I am a private person, because I did not take the platform and try to discredit and spill all kind of stuff and say all kind of crazy things, my challenge was to allow God to heal me quietly. And for the first maybe 4.5 years, I did absolutely nothing. I did leadership training, speaker conferences. I did none of the above. This was a time that I was challenged, that it was like God was doing open heart surgery on me with no anesthesia. I felt every emotion. I felt all the pain. I dealt with the anger. I dealt with the rage, the unforgiveness, the betrayal, all of it. And it was, the Lord began to tell me, if you walk through this, if you walk through this process in obedience, I'm going to take you places you have never dreamed. Now, to be honest with you, when you hear that, I didn't want to hear that. I want you to get me out, and I want you to rescue me right now. I don't want to go through no process. I don't want to hear no more prophetic words. I want you to rescue me today and everything be all right. Well, that's not the case.
So now when you're talking about this whole process of just getting to this place of that now we're going to go ahead and we're going to divorce, and we've made that decision. So one of the things you talk about in the book is identity. What happened
yes.
to your identity? What was going on with you in that particular moment as it related to your identity?
I forgot who I was.
Talk to us about that experience.
I remember, like I said earlier, I came from a long, all five of my brothers are in ministry, pastors, bishops, you know, all of them. My great-grandfather, my father was a pastor, all of that. So I came from a ministry family. They were not well-known, but they were known in their own right. And so one day when I was in the middle of the sickness of all this that was going on, my brother Richard, who is Pastor Richard now, called me. And he started talking to me about our godly heritage. And he started talking to me about how my parents prayed for us and when they would take us to church and how they would share the principles of God with them as a young kid and the importance of family values and all of this stuff that our parents stood for. And it's like the light went on and he began to rehearse who my parents were, what I came from, and what they deposited in me at a very young age. And I'm telling you, it's like somebody said, slapped me across the face and said, you know, wake up. Do you not know who you are? Let me remind you. And then as the longer I sat and listened to him talk, I was just very quiet listening to him. It was like something inside of me leaped. I did not know how I was going to get from point A to point B because the reality was I still had to deal with a 4-month-old child, a 3-year-old daughter, and all the stuff that comes with divorce. That didn't go away right away. I still had to deal with that. However, as he began to paint the picture for me, it gave me a mental picture of, oh, my God, I'm not this horrible person. Oh, my God, I do have a purpose. And I started dreaming again. I came across journals that I used to write in about things that I wanted to do, places that I wanted to go, things that God put in my heart to do. I had forgotten about them. Literally, they were packed away in boxes for years. And so I can really say that that was the beginning of my jarring me and saying, okay, wait a minute. It's like God brought me to a place in the midst of all the chaos. He started talking to me. And I had to decipher between his voice and other people's voices because other people were saying, you know, it's over for her. She don't, you know, she wasn't nothing without him, no way, you know, all that craziness.
Right.
And I was believing it. So I had to change my belief system. And I had to start believing what I read in my journals, what I know God said about me in his word, and what I truly believed in my own heart. I had to dig through some stuff and find it.
Well, you know, let me just read an excerpt from your book on page 7. It says, if you intricately trace the life of someone you believe to be successful, what you detect is not only the applause of men for a job well done, but the hindrances within that person, such as insecurities, failures, and resentments. We all have issues. We are all guilty of listening to someone else's voice, whether friend, foe, or even our own. The challenge is, in the midst of all we hear, we must find a way to decipher the importance of what is said and to discern if, when, and how we are to follow. And I think that's just awesome when you're talking about what you've experienced in listening to listening to the voices. Now, the next chapter I want to talk about is Journey, your second part. We'll move from those voices to In the Beginning Was a Baby Girl. Now, tell us about that. What is this all about?
That's about me and my family, and it was really interesting, the process of writing this book, because in writing it, it's almost I went from the beginning and then I stopped and went from the end to the beginning. I talk about my parents and what I remember. My father passed away when I was very 2 years old, so I don't remember him, but my mom passed away when I was 15, and my family was a family in leadership. And you know, we were always in church, and, you know, it was the Johnsons. We were always doing something, whether we wanted to or not. And that chapter gives the readers a history of where I came from, because I did not understand the importance of my heritage until my brother began to remind me, but even greater when I started writing the book, because it is so easy to get lost and forget what's in you when you're in the middle of stuff. And so in that book, it talks about, in that chapter, it talks about my father. Let me just say this. I have five brothers. All five of my brothers are married and have been married for 20-plus years, all of them. So they lived a life in front of me. It was clear to me what they saw as young kids in their relationship with my mother and father. They tell me that all of my brothers and all of us are very affectionate because they saw that in our home. My dad would come home and bend my mother over, give her a Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers move, kiss her long and hard, saying, "Hey, baby girl, your man is home." You know, that was the kind of relationship that they had.
Yeah.
So my brothers demonstrated that in front of me, which kept the vision alive for me, which was so hard when I got a divorce, because that's not what I saw growing up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So in that whole chapter, it just gives you a history of where we come from. And I think it's important. Even though you may not have the background that I have, still, what you come from is very important to where you're going.
And it also illustrates in this chapter about getting back in touch with your identity.
Absolutely.
That suffered so much damage and loss.
Absolutely.
You know, with this whole process going forward. Now, let's continue this journey, and we're going to talk about you breaking the silence.
Woo! That was probably the toughest chapter for me to write. Breaking the silence had a lot to do with my daughter. She will be... Oh, God, y'all pray for me, America, please. You'll be 13 next month. And I'm like, woo, Jesus.
Let's just stop and extend our hands right
yes,
now.
God. Yes, God. Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. And she cute, and we just came back from the hair salon. She got her little bangs cut, and I thought, oh, Lord, Jesus, help me, God. But there in my family, and I think it's true in most African-American families, our mothers were pillars. Our grandmothers, our aunties, they were a solid rock.
Yeah.
But my mom, there were so many things about her I did not know, about her past, about how she grew up. I didn't know. And that generation did not talk about the ugly.
Correct.
That was a huge no-no.
Yes.
Well, in this particular chapter, so as I got older, I had so many questions about my life. Where did this habit come from? I had all these questions, and my mother had a very good friend. Her name was, we called her Mama Nola. They were very, very close. And after my mom passed, her job was to come visit each one of my mother's children to make sure everything was okay, that everybody was okay. In this particular year, she was coming to see me, and I had a list of where we were going, places to go, people to see, and questions to ask. I was always pushing the envelope, asking questions. And so I had all these questions that I was going to ask her about my mother, and I figured as me being an adult, she's just going to tell me, and then I'm going to have some answers, questions answered, and everybody will be happy. 3 weeks before she was to come to Nashville, she passed away.
Oh, no.
So again, I had no answers.
Sure.
Well, as time went on, my daughter loves everybody. I mean, she just loves people. And she was 7 years old at the time. And the lady, I came to pick her up at Children's Church. And I saw her walking towards me, and I can tell in her face that something was not right.
Yeah.
And so when I asked her, I said, well, you okay, Pumpkin? She's like, yeah, I'm fine. She was very respectful, you know, and didn't want to add any more worries to Mama, you know. So she found out months and months and months later, a lady, an adult, came to her in Children's Church and said, oh, Maya, you look so pretty. You always look so pretty. Listen, baby, is your mom and dad divorced? Now,
what are you doing asking a
7-year-old that? And because I taught her to respect adults, you know, she said, yes, ma'am. And anything else the lady proceeded to ask, she said, you'll have to talk to my mom. Well, Maya waited for literally 6 or 7 months before she told this to me. She knows how protective I am of them. But what I saw that was more frightening than anything was the same pattern that I developed, where I walked around carrying things, not talking about it, because you were taught what goes on in the house stays in the house, and you bet not tell nobody but God.
Okay. So stop right there for me. Stop right there.
Okay.
What I think I'm hearing is a principle.
Exactly.
About, and many of us as being in the same generation that you are, you're saying is that what occurs, what happens to us as young women, young adults, and even with our own daughters and children, grandchildren, you're really saying it's time to break the silence.
Absolutely. Because what happens, because I saw this pattern in her, and it took her so long to tell me, because she thought, in the book I say, she saw me ball my fist up like Celia in The Color Purple because I wanted to smack that lady. I wanted to get her, okay? Now, I dealt with Maya and told her that she didn't do anything wrong. But trust me, I went and found the adult, and I dealt with her as well. But the pattern that she was developing was, I can't tell because I don't want to be a burden. I don't want Mommy to be hurt. So I'm just going to learn to be a big girl and carry the weight of this. I did the same thing. And when I saw her doing it, because I took all of that same little crazy principle and brought it into my marriage, into my other relationships, because when things go crazy, you just pray, talk to God, and it's going to be okay. You don't rock the boat. You just let God work it out. Well, that's not even healthy. It's not healthy to hold, because it becomes toxic after a while. You hold all this stuff in. It takes its physical toll on you. It shows up in so many different areas of your life. So I knew I needed to break this in her as quick as I could. So we started talking, and we started dialogue, and she started sharing how she felt and why she felt like she couldn't come to me and tell me this. And she said, I didn't want you to worry about anything else. She's 7 years old.
Wow.
So she's fully aware that her dad is not in the house, you know, going with them on the weekends, two different worlds, two different sets of principles, two different sets of rules. She just didn't want to add anything else, which in my opinion is a trick of the enemy, because if he can keep them closed, and keep them secluded, and thinking you can handle this on your own, it starts messing with their head and start messing with their mind. So we have a very good relationship where we talk about anything. I mean, she will ask it. She will ask it. And I know it's because I was determined that she would not grow up like that and learn to hold and harbor stuff and thinking that she has to handle it on her own or say things what she thinks other people want to hear and not be honest about what's really going on inside of her. So that's where that came from.
Well, you also talk about, there's a little quote in your book, the moment we decide to keep silent about obvious emotional error in the name of loyalty, we have crossed the line to detrimental enablement. Talk about that.
Absolutely. Oh, my Lord. You know, it's... We say, you know, we're just loyal because we don't want to expose this person or expose what they have done, and we just, you know, they can come to us and we want people to think or believe that a person's challenges or secrets or whatever are safe, and that's good.
Yeah.
But when you are holding something and not being honest, that person's sin or secret, and it's causing harm to them, you have a responsibility to say, wait a minute, I know you trust me with this. Now, I'm not saying you got to go out in your intercessory prayer group and give names and details and then say, let's pray about it. I'm saying that you have to use wisdom and say, I cannot be an enabler. I cannot allow you to continue in this kind of behavior because you're going to kill your fool self and other people around you.
Yeah.
And you become, you're not healthy. You're not becoming whole. You say what that person wants to hear, and then they continue in where they are. They don't grow, and you don't grow. And you may take the risk of losing that relationship. But at least if you lost it, it will not be because you're being vindictive. It's because you were being truthful, and you love them enough to tell them the truth so that they can be healed.
So are you also, when we speak of this, of breaking the silence and then not enabling others, are you also talking in retrospect to your marriage and the relationship of also being open and honest in those
Absolutely.
Relationships?
Absolutely. In my journey, I had to go, I mean, I don't have time, to be honest with you, to sit and point out all my ex-husband's issues. That's not important.
We don't want to talk about that on the air.
We don't need that. That's just not important. And the reason why I wrote the book the way I wrote it, because, Anna, I remember when I was going through and I went to a women's conference, and, you know, when you're just in a place, you just need something.
Yes.
You need a word. You need something. And I remember sitting in this particular conference only to sit here and listen to this person have just as many issues that I had, who was hurting just as bad as I was, and used that opportunity to spill all their guts. I was like, I picked up my little stuff, and I got out of there. Because junk does not heal anybody. Slander does not heal anybody.
Yeah.
And so I was determined that when I went on my journey, it was from my perspective, and it had to do with my personal walk and things that I learned and things that I walked through. So one of the things that I did not do is I was not completely open about things that I saw, things that I knew, things that I felt, things that were uncomfortable. I should have dealt with it. I should have said, okay, listen, there's some areas here that we need to address, and not be afraid of what, quote-unquote, the consequences were going to be. That didn't have anything to do with him. That had to do with me. That was my insecurity of not that I could come and say,
well,
ABCD.
Yes, you're listening. Thank you, Deborah. We're going to take a short break, and I'm going to come right back. But you're listening to Anna, the Real McCoy, on Woman Act Now Radio with our guest, Deborah D. Winings, talking about her book, Life Altered, Not Over. So we want you to stay tuned. We're going to come right back. Take that potty break if you need to.
You know you need to get control of your finances, but like many people, you probably don't know where to start. That's why Anna McCoy and her husband Richmond have created a plan of action they call Building Generational Wealth. This easy-to-follow workbook contains step-by-step instructions that will enable you to understand and act to secure your financial future. You'll learn how to determine your net worth, reduce debt, manage your money, and even plan for retirement. Seize your financial future today. To order, simply visit AnnaMcCoy.com.
All right, welcome back to the show. You're listening to Anna, the Real McCoy, on Woman Act Now Radio. We're talking with our guest, Deborah D. Winings, author of Life Altered, Not Over. And we've talked about several different things, about your identity, getting your identity, becoming more familiar with who you are and the legacy of who you are. When we talk about really restoration from difficult times in our lives, it's important that you dream again and that you know who you are. So in this second half of the show, Deborah is going to continue to take us through this journey, her silent journey to wholeness as she talks about in her book. So this particular chapter, Deborah, and I'd like to welcome you back to the show.
Thank you.
You're talking about, which I love, by the way, and that's Journey Forward, and that's chapter 4 of the book, but she's talking about fact is, truth is. And the reality is that she's going to really empower us with some of these statements. Let me just start off, first of all, Deborah, before I have you talk about them, and just read some of these statements that you've made to just set up how you're going to talk to us about the fact versus the truth. The fact is, you were hurt. Truth is, it didn't kill you. Don't you love it, people? Fact is, you didn't ask for this pain. Truth is, you survived it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Fact is, doctors gave you 6 to 9 months to live. Truth is, God determines time.
Mm-hmm.
Fact is, you had a setback. Truth is, it launched you forward. Fact is, you are a single parent. Truth is, your children are not fatherless. Fact is, you are divorced. Truth is, your life is not over. So, Deborah, talk to us about this whole part of the journey, your facts, dealing with facts versus what the real truth is, because, you know, facts can change on you.
Yes, they can. And, you know, I think when you look at it, when I started looking at stuff, you know, to be honest with you, there was a point where I wasn't sure which way was up. But at some point, I just stopped, and I looked at this thing. My friend Donald Wright taught me it is what it is. And I sat there and looked at what things were, not what I wanted to be, not what I was praying for, not what I was believing God for, not what everybody was telling me, but for what it was. And I could no longer convince myself that that wall was purple. The wall was not purple. The wall was green. And I had to say, okay, this marriage is going to end. That is a fact. So now what are you going to do? And I had to just look at it. I had these two babies. I never wanted to be a single parent.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, well, I got these two babies. All right, how am I going to? I had to look at it. It did not alter my trust in God. It increased it because I had to go to him and say, I don't know how to be a mother. I have an innate ability. I'm loving, I care and all that, but I don't know how. I've never been a mom before. So you're going to have to teach me how to hear from you so when my children get crazy, I'll know what to do. Or
yeah.
When they ask questions, I will know how to answer them. So I started looking at stuff and saying, this is what it is. But the truth is, this is what you said. And it almost became funny to me because, you know, some things were tight. I'm like, woo, we ain't got no money up in yonder. All right, Jesus, you want to come up and do something. It was 2 minutes later, we get a knock at the door. A friend of mine has boxes of food. So I bring my children in and I say, look what God did. Do you see that? They're like, oh, man, that is so cool. That's how they talk. So the fact is, we were broke. But the truth is, he supplied our need.
Because
you can get so blinded by what is in front of you and even try to create something that really is not there. But you have to look at what it is and then find, all right, but the reality is, I can. I'm a person. I like people. I can write. I can speak. I have all kinds of talents and abilities. I'm not going to die. I'm still alive. Why am I still here? Let me go find that out. And so that's where that was motivated from, because you can look at stuff. I think that's the same chapter I give you the example of finding truth in Sahara Desert. You know, it's not necessarily convenient where you find truth and where you find things that are real in front of your face, but it's not necessarily convenient. It's not that you may be riding down the street and, oh, God, the Spirit of the Lord comes upon you and poof, he gives you a revelation. No, not necessarily so. You could be driving down the street and he drops an ideal in your heart.
Yeah.
Or a thought comes to you and you're like, I can do that. I can do that. And just being practical, I just had to it's like I was a kid in a candy store because I was asking him, okay, this is what this is, but what am I supposed to do about that? How do I do that? That's how that was motivated. And it just became funny because I'm a visual person, And when I thought about the five-star hotels, you've been in some of the five-star hotels, Anna, you know, it's like, oh, this is the bomb. But you didn't know that you opened your eyes and you were in the Sahara Desert. Your environment may not have changed, but you did.
You know what? One of the things I want to comment on your in this particular chapter, when you talk about fact is versus truth, one of the things that you say here, it's all about how you look at it. Truth
right.
is one to take, one not to take the path of least resistance, but make a painful choice to stop,
mm-hmm.
smell the roses, even with the thorns on the stem.
Yes.
That's what truth will do for you.
Yes,
and
it will.
You also said, which I really like this, you said, hold truth close to your bosom.
Mm-hmm.
Wrap
mm-hmm.
around you like a warm blanket on a cold, windy night. Embrace
mm-hmm.
truth and never let truth out of your sight. The
yes.
principle of truth became more real to me after the passing of your mother. So talk about that for us.
When my mom passed, I mean, my mom and I were very close. And she was the neighborhood mom. You know, we always had people in our home. I mean, my brothers and I used to say, why don't they go to their own house? You know, there was always somebody in our house. My mother feeding, taking care of, and clothing, and talking to somebody. When she passed, my whole life turned upside down. I went to live with my oldest brother and his wife. Well, she had two small children. And so here comes this teenager that just totally disrupted their way of living because they weren't expecting to have to take care of me. And so in our relationship, it was a lot of friction. It was very difficult because she was not my mom, but I wanted her to be. I wanted her to fill this hole in my heart, and she could not do so. And so it was very, very difficult. But when I started understanding that she's not your mother, that doesn't mean she doesn't love me, but she's not, she cannot be your mother. That may be a simple thing to somebody else, but that was a slap in the face for me.
That was
because
truth for you.
That was truth for me because that way it helped me not to have certain expectations. If she didn't respond to me a certain way, if she didn't do for me what she did for others or her own children, I wasn't tripping because I understood she's not your mother anyway.
Yeah. And so
that was
go ahead.
Well, it was just a harsh reality, you know, and I had to learn to kind of look at stuff not through a glass window, but just really, okay. This is what it is, and as difficult as it may be, and as much as I wanted that type of relationship, it wasn't going to happen with her. But God, in his faithfulness, because he knew me and he knew my heart, he sent people that could be just what I needed. He is so faithful. He's just not going to leave you out there for dead. He's going to cover you in every area because he knew I needed that for my development and my growth.
Well, you know, also you talk about as a part of that growth in order to move you from fact to truth, one of the things you did was journal your way to wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about the journaling prospect, the process and how important you think it is for others to journal and be able to move from fact to truth, to be able as a way to actually begin to embrace that truth.
Well, my journaling started because my mom passed, and my brother was an evangelist at the time, and there weren't many teenagers my age around. There were a lot of different adults. It was a major culture shock. I mean, I grew up born and raised in Sacramento, California, so I went to school was a third white, third black, third Chinese, you know, so integration was normal. Well, we moved to the South, and I was like, ooh, we, wow, you know, where you heard all kinds of things and saw all kinds of things. It was very different, you know, for me. But I started journaling because I didn't know how to communicate and say how I was feeling, so I would just write it. What was crazy is I would keep writing until I felt better. I did not necessarily go back and look at what I wrote. I just wrote until I released it, until it was done. And then as I got older, I started, I was changing. So when I did finally go back and look at what I written, it was just, you can just see where you are. You can see the growth. You can see the, you know, the areas that are still the same. And you can just see all these different things. But what it does is it helps you, or for me, it helped me to be honest about where I was. Because we are taught, you know, when you love God, you say you love God the whole nine, you know, you think you have to approach God with this, you know, thou heavenly Father who is upon the heavens, who created the star. Yeah, he did. But he's a father, and he loves us so much that you can go to him and say, Daddy, I am ticked off. I'm so hot. I'm hot as fish grease right now. I mean, you can talk to him like that. So through my journaling, I learned that I can be honest about how I felt. And then as I was writing, he would give me answers. And so I started looking at things for, I was honest in my writing, and then I started taking what I wrote and I started saying some of those things that were setting me free, because I was so bound, because I thought I had to do things a certain way. And, you know, you're growing up, you know, who are you going to tell? Then my brother became a pastor. You can't go outside the pastor's house and tell nobody what's going on in your house. Are you crazy? Yeah. You know, you get stoned to death. And then you marry this high-profile person. Who was I going to go talk to?
Right.
Who was going to believe me over him? Mm-hmm. Who? So I just learned to suppress it, and yet then I learned to write it on paper. And it really became, I never dreamed it would come into a, I would use it as a book, some of it. But it helped me to walk in the level of truth that I was not used to speaking. And then the more I wrote, the more I was able to speak the truth.
Well, I'm gonna share with our listening audience some of those areas that the journaling process actually illuminated for you. One, as you just shared with us, it brought to light hidden issues that I was unable to verbalize.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, it evaluated where I was and how I got there.
Right.
Number three, it defined and redefined each experience. Now, what I'm interested in that third one, Deborah, is when you said it define and redefine, are you also saying that when we journal our experience, but then it also gives us an opportunity to really redefine the experience, whether it's fact or truth?
Yes, because you're journaling about something that you went through 5 years ago. Well, 5 years later, you look back at it, and it may not be the exact same situation, but you can go back and see how you've grown, and it helps you to define, okay, well, that little piece I still got to work on, but I'm not this anymore.
Okay.
And it helps you to see clearly the growth process. It cannot necessarily be 5 years. It could be you journal in January 1. You know how we write down our goals for the year. Well, by December 31st, you go back and you look, wow, I have accomplished more than half of this in doing, reaching my goal. However, I still have some character issues that I need to go back and deal with.
Mm.
So it stays in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And even though you never write it, you may not even write it all down, it's in you, so it's ever present. It's saying to you, you know, okay, now you've turned 40. You know, when you turn 40, you go through this whole thing and you start reevaluating who you are and what you've done and where you're going. It's the same process in our everyday life. I think we cheat ourselves when we don't go back and take a clear evaluation of where we are. Who is around us? Why are they there? Why am I not gone? I've not grown any further than this. Why do I keep going around the same cycle? But sometimes we like to ignore it and just jump and shout it away and pray it away and think it's going to be gone. Well, that's not going to happen. You go with you everywhere you go. So we can't escape those things. It's just some the simple principles that we don't sometimes take a hold to and really look at it, because really, as a believer and a non-believer, we are always developing. We are always learning. We are always growing. We are always changing. So there's nothing wrong with doing a self-evaluation.
Okay. The next thing that we want to talk about on our journey, we have about 15 minutes, and the next thing is I want to talk about going through this process is if the ocean could speak. What is it going to say to us, Deborah? What did it say to you?
Oh, my God. Dear friends of mine have a condo in Panama City Beach, Florida, and they extended that to me to write my book. And I was sitting on the balcony one day, and I love water. I was just sitting there, and I was stuck. I had writer's block, I guess. I was just kind of stuck, and I was just sitting there. And the longer I looked in the water, and I thought, ooh, if this ocean could tell some stories, what in the world would it say? I was like, oh, my God, I jumped up, you know, and started writing.
Yes.
And as beautiful as the ocean is, underneath is all kind of stuff.
Sure.
And you relate the ocean to ourselves, that people look at you, you're talented, you're beautiful, you know, you're handsome, you got it going on, you're an entrepreneur, you're a businessman, businesswoman, but they don't have a clue who you really are, what it took for you to become what I just named. And even though sometimes people look at the outside and look at our talent, they have missed the real treasures of knowing who we are inside and what it took to develop us into being. What we do is just a product of who we are. It's not a whole person. I mean, what's in us is that character and how we develop and our integrity and who we are when nobody's looking. And that's how I looked at it at the ocean. I was like, you know, we jet ski on the water and, you know, we ooh and ah, but there's some treasures down there and there's some junk under there.
Sure.
So we've got stuff in our lives that we have to deal with and that we have to bring to the forefront so that the ooh and ahing is not just what we see on the surface, but it is also a reflection of us on the inside. Because a fish does not have – nobody has to tell a fish how to be a fish.
Yes.
It knows what it's created to do. We are the only species that somebody else has to tell us who we are. When we look into the Word of God and see that we are made out of the image, we come out of the very heart of God, what better person to go and say, well, who am I? You made me. Can you give me the 411 on me? Because I don't know what I'm doing. But we look for it and try to become something other than what we were really created to be. And we rob the world of you and who you are and what you have to offer because you don't know who you are.
Well, what's interesting is one of the comments that you wrote about in your book was talking to a former in-law and trying to tell your version of
mm-hmm.
who you were versus what occurred in this relationship and
mm-hmm.
Having a need to convince her of your truth. And
yes.
you went on to say something came to you, or, you know, you kind of came to yourself. And what I like about it is what you said is that after you were really trying to share with her and defending yourself, you finally came to yourself. And you know what? Ask yourself, or basically said, she does not validate your life. I do.
Right.
And
exactly.
When you're talking about us knowing who we are, knowing what we have to offer to the world, then we don't need others to really begin to validate who we are and
Absolutely.
To validate our lives.
Absolutely. And we depend on that sometimes because of our own insecurities, and we all have them. That is why it is vitally important to surround yourself with people that are like-minded, people that will push you to where you need to go, not just to where you want to go, but where you've got to go, where you're destined to go. It's important to have an Anna McCoy who can speak into your life on a daily basis and say, yes, you can, and here's the principles to tell you why. And to have an infrastructure that will remind you that, no, we can't go over there because that distracts you from the goal of going to where you need to go. You got to have people in your life that will pull your coattail or pull you by your hair and remind you, girlfriend, now you lost your mind and you know better. Come on. That's important. And when you have that on the regular basis, you will find the need less and less to have somebody else validate who you are, because you've got people around you who understand it better than you do. And you can walk in that level of confidence because now you know.
Wow. Now, we have about 10 minutes to the show. You're listening to Anna, The Real McCoy on Woman Act Now Radio, where we're all about empowering you to be the very best that you can be and to execute on your dreams and your visions. We've been talking with Deborah Winans, D. Winans, on her book, Life Altered But Not Over. I want to encourage you to get it because there's still a couple of more steps that we want to take in this journey that we'll move quickly through. And this is one that many of us certainly have experienced in our life, this next step of the journey, and that is betrayal and forgiveness.
Yes. That was a doozy. That
we
was
got our own thoughts. We don't even have to read what you said.
That was a doozy. That was probably the most painful for me, because you think that people love you. I mean, so, you know, they're friends as long as everything is going cool, but the moment your status changes, you begin to see the relationships for what they really are, and that was very, very difficult for me. That was probably, in my opinion, more painful, just as painful as the divorce itself, because there were relationships that I had for many, many years, and some of them were not as long as others, but what we shared was what I thought was a covenant. And so when everything changed, you know, no longer, you know, we're coming into the gray area, or we want to be mutual or whatever the case, but I had to make a decision to forgive. And that I began to see that forgiveness is not a right. It is a gift.
Oh.
I got the right to be mad.
Yes.
I had proof. It was clear. Anybody in their right mind would be mad and hurt and feel like you have the right not to forgive. But because I need forgiveness every single second of the day, I began to see it as a gift. Because when you don't walk in forgiveness of any level, people hold you captive. And they'll hold you in a place that can smother your dreams, choke your visions, and even keep you from remembering who you are and what your purpose was. You look up, 10, 20, 30 years is gone, and you're still carrying something. You see that person, and it's like it was yesterday. I needed to be free. I needed to breathe. I didn't want that. I lived in that place for too long. And when I got that, I'm telling you, and no, it was not easy. It was something I had to practice on a daily basis. I had to make a decision. No, okay, this hurts. The pain, it's just like a scar. You have a scar, and you see the scar on your arm. You know exactly what happened. You know when you fell off that tricycle and you busted your knee on that rock, but you don't feel the pain of the scar. You know it's there. You know what happened. But the memory of the pain is no longer there, and that takes God. That takes God to walk you to that place.
Well, you know, I think you're absolutely right, and I'm going to quote this from your book that says, pain is real. No, nobody should tell you not to feel it. But displaced or mismanaged pain can be dangerous. So that's why it's necessary that we use forgiveness as a gift from God and really give it away at every opportunity that we have.
Absolutely.
So now moving on to journey number 7 is everyone needs, I believe it's Samwise
Gamgee.
Gamgee. Okay, tell us about Sam.
Sam, you know, I don't know, I'm a movie buff, and there's a movie called The Lord of the Rings, and if you've never seen all three of them, it is a must-see. There's so many great principles in that movie. But this particular part that I was talking about in that chapter, Sam and Frodo had to destroy this ring, and Sam's assignment was to make sure that Frodo fulfilled his vision. And it was hard for Frodo. Sam couldn't carry it for him, but Frodo went through all kind of craziness and, you know, all kind of physical challenges and mental and emotional challenges because he was destined to destroy this ring of power. But Sam, in my opinion's role, was just as phenomenal as Frodo, because Frodo's assignment was to do whatever was necessary to make sure, not that Sam fulfilled his own vision, but that Frodo fulfilled his vision, which means everything that Sam was and what he wanted to do, what he wanted to be, he laid it down. And he put it aside because he loved his friend so much, and he was committed to seeing him do what he was supposed to do. And that whole chapter, that is my favorite chapter in my book, because it talks about my friends and people who have walked with me through some of the darkest days in my relationship. And I'm telling you, everybody, David in the Bible had Nathan. And Nathan was a prophet, and Nathan was his friend. And Nathan would tell David, no, David, it is you. You are the man that is sin. You are the man that is wrong. And then yet he would turn around and bless David. Jonathan and David were friends. They were friends. And the Bible says that Jonathan loved him more than himself. There was no homosexual relationship. He was committed. Jonathan was committed to make sure that David filled his position and fulfilled his dreams. And there are people like that that have walked with me, that pushed me, that stepped aside and let me cry and let me go off and let me get angry, but they kept me focused on what I was supposed to do, even when I didn't feel like it, even when I didn't want to hear it. You've got to have those friends. Solomon, who was David's son, made an office for a friend. He had all these different offices when he became king, but the office that blew me away more than anything was Zadok. He said, Zadok, you are a priest and friend to the king. That friendship was so important to him, he made it an office. Jesus said, no greater love than a man have been lay his life down for his friend. So friendships are important. I'm not talking about acquaintances. I'm talking about friends that will walk to the end of the earth with you. Go ahead.
You and I share a wonderful friend in Lee Jenkins. I see he's mentioned here. We're talking about the same Lee from Atlanta, Georgia.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
I tell you, that taking care of business. And guess what?
Yes.
Lee's going to be our guest on next week, talking about what do you do when your money is funny. But let me read from Lee, because, you know, he my partner, too.
Yes, my boy.
You know, we don't share some of the same pain and suffering that you guys share, but because we kind of met each other on our way up the ladder, not at the bottom of the ladder. But
y'all can, you met him when you wasn't broke, huh?
Yeah, we weren't broke then. But funny, what's interesting about this, and we only have about 2 minutes to the program, but I want to close on a couple of things here. When you talk about these relationships, you've identified some relationships is that we want to have the optimistic listener in our lives. And you might want to identify who that friend is, that person who is always optimistic that there is a way. Maybe a person who is the rock in your life, motivator, a person who can pull you, who can become that cheerleader and remind you of all the gifts and the talents. And
right.
Then, of course, there's the realist, and you want the one to tell you, girl, you better straighten up and look and see what's happening.
That's right.
And then these words from Lee, which I think are great. He says, to say that Deborah Winans has been a great friend of mine for well over 20 years is an understatement. She has been more than a friend. She has been family. Deborah has been a sister to me in every sense of the word. We met in our early 20s when we were both trying to figure out what God had called us to do. We had no money and no job. You know, they was pitiful. They ain't had nothing, y'all.
We was toe up, y'all.
So what we want to do, we're going to take the last 60 seconds, but Lee is a great friend of ours, just an incredible man of God, educator. He's going to be with us on next week, but I want to encourage you to visit DeborahDWinans.com. Is that correct, Deborah?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, because we've had some listeners who have asked where can they get your book, and I directed them to your website, as well as can they get it from Amazon.com as well?
We are in the process of working out the contracts of that right now as we speak, actually. So it'll be in the store soon, but for right now, you can go to the website, and we'll send it out to you right away.
Okay, so visit DeborahGWinans.com in order to purchase the book. In addition to that, Deborah can also be seen on GospelOnDemandTV.com. So check it out. And thank
Gospel
you for
on, GospelOnDemand.tv.
GospelOnDemand.tv.
Yes.
And anything else happening with you, Deborah? Because we're currently offline, but if they listen for the individuals who are listening to it on the archives, you can go ahead and give any upcoming things that you might be doing. You're going to be in a city near you. What are you doing with your book tour or all of that good stuff?
We are actually, it's going to be posted on my website in the next 10 days. We are just winding up the book tour and getting that confirmed. And we'll be, of course, we'll be able to show you what city we'll be in and where it's going to be. And we've got some speaking things coming up. I'm just trying to juggle it all and be a mommy and all that at the same time. School getting ready to start back. It's been crazy. So we're going to, and then when you go to the website, you'll be able to see what is definitely happening. And I just want to thank you guys for listening and being interested. It means so much to me to see people's lives change. And that's my passion, is to see someone's life change and to walk in their purpose. And so I want to thank you, Anna, so much for even just trusting me to be on your show. And I just think you're an incredible person anyway. You know, you'd be OMD anyway.
Well,
so,
thank you. Well, let me tell you, it's certainly been our pleasure, and I had some studio guests in studio with me today, Monique and Juanita, all the way from California, and they've just been sitting quietly back there listening to you. So let's give her a round of applause. So, Deborah, we love you, and we really appreciate your time, and I know it's important, and I know that your words will be an inspiration and a blessing to many. So, again, for those of you listening, visit Deborah D. Winans to find out more about what this fabulous woman is doing to change the lives and encourage women and men to live out their purpose on her website, and maybe you'll get to see her in a city near you. So we'll talk to you soon, and God bless you.
God bless you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.